Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Welcome to Skylines, the City Metric podcast. I'm John.
And I'm Stephanie, and this week we're doing the history episode.
Ooh, I love history. Can we talk about kings and queens? I love that kind of...
Well, we'll get onto the kings and queens, but first of all, I want to ask you about the history of the tube, because you have written the... world-leading, genre-defining article on why tube stations are called what they are.
Tube lines.
Oh, sorry, tube lines.
Stations, like, I'm going to have to do that at some point.
That's a book, right?
That is literally a book. Although, like, I did intend this to be, like, just kind of like a quick listicle post, because I did a piece the other week about why English county names are as they are, and I thought, what else can I do names of? I know, I'll do the tube. People love the tube. So I did the tube lines, and I thought, there's only 12 lines. It won't take that long. And then I accidentally wrote a 3,500-word history of the tube. Because to explain why the lines are called what they're called, you kind of have to sort of delve back into history a little bit, and then you stick in a line saying, oh, and then they extended it to, like, Edgware, and then, like, before you know it, you've just, like, you've written a thesis. So,
okay, well, talk me through your dissertation. What's your favourite story of why a tube line is called what it's called?
Okay, something that I hadn't quite appreciated. The two things I hadn't appreciated. Firstly, like, the tube kind of gets built in a couple of waves. There's a very early wave where they do what's known as subsurface lines, which is where they literally dig a trench, stick some tracks in it, put a roof on it again. So that's like the district, the circle, the metropolitan, all those kind of very shallow lines. And that all starts, that's like the 1860s, 1870s. Then 30 years after that, the tunnelling technology gets better, so they can actually sort of bore deep lines through, like, properly underground. Those are the ones that should actually be called tubes, because they did literally bore a tube through the earth. And that's all, that kind of runs in sort of late 1890s, early 1900s. And then it pretty much stops dead in 1906. And then there's a big gap where, like, after that, the network sort of keeps expanding. It grows into the suburbs, and they sort of build houses around it to kind of, you know, pay for a lot of it through real estate development. But they do not, there is no significant underground railway built under central London between about 1907 and 1968.
That feels like a very specific year. Is it just that they looked at the map and went,
that's fine, they're done, yeah. No, I mean, I think part of it is just, I mean, obviously part of it is, you know, there's quite a lot that happens between 1907 and 1968 in the way of, you know, big wars, and which is probably a factor. But I think part of it is just, it's a sort of changing world. So, like, in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, it's like still that kind of gilded age where these kind of mega rich financiers can just kind of make things happen due to sheer force of will. And then, so one of the big figures in the early years of London Underground is a guy called Charles Tyson Yerkes, who was an American financier. I think he also helped build the Chicago Elevated Railway. And he brought together a lot of the plans to build various lines into one company. So he was a key figure in getting the Piccadilly and Northern and Bakerloo lines all built. And it was just possible at that point for massively rich men to kind of build these big infrastructure projects. And then the world changes a bit and governments become more interventionist. You get in the US, there's Teddy Roosevelt doing his trust busting, and it just becomes a less friendly age for billionaires to think, right, I'm just going to do that. So I think that's part of it. And, you know, part of it probably is the fact that the network was not complete exactly, but it reached a point where, like, it was harder to sort of think, right, well, if we build a line there, that will definitely be profitable.
Right.
So yeah, it gets harder for the private sector to do it, and the state kind of starts getting involved in the 30s, but it's a very long time before it gets to... Like, there's talk of building new lines as early as, like, the late 1940s, but, you know, there's also, you know, a welfare state to build and an NHS and so on. So it kind of takes a while for that to get to the top of the priority list. And then they built the Victoria Line in the 1960s, and that's the first one in, like, literally six decades where they dig a tunnel under central London. I've just rambled quite a lot there, but you can see how this ended up as, like, 3,500 words, from... really.
So tell me, because... Okay, so the Victoria Line and the Jubilee Line, I feel like you can kind of figure out with a bit of thought. The Baker...
We'll come back to those, okay, because this is my other big discovery. Or not discovery, the big thing. Kind of, yeah, anyway, I'll come back to that.
You'll come back to those. The Bakerloo Line is just because it links Baker Street and Waterloo, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. That's an easy one.
The Central Line...
was the Central London Railway. That was just the name. It was, and I can't work out for the life of me whether that was because... It's an east-west line that ran between the two existing east-west lines, so it might have been this is the central one, or it might just have been if you were trying to get people to use your line rather than one of the other ones, then that was quite a nifty way of branding it to kind of say, oh, no, you want to get on the central line, actually. So I don't know, but that's where it comes from.
And the Northern Line?
The Northern Line, in some ways, is the best one, because that was two different companies. There was the City and South London one, and there was the Charing Cross, Euston and Hampstead or something like that, and they got merged together by this Charles Tyson Yerkes guy, which is why it's such a weird line with bits all over the place. But it's also the line that goes furthest to the south of all the London Underground lines. It's the one that goes further south than any other, and it's not the one that goes further north than any other. The reason it gets lumbered with the name Northern Line, which is obviously ridiculous, is because in the 30s, when the London Passenger Transport Board, which was the kind of first consolidated, it's a predecessor of TfL, basically. It was the first body actually sort of planning the network as a whole rather than just being an independent company running a little bit of it. That came up with this thing called the New Works Programme, which was all these sort of suburban extensions it wanted to build. And a big part of that was going to be the Northern Heights Programme, which would have taken over the little line from Moorgate to Finsbury Park, and connected that up with existing branch lines up towards like Highgate and Alexandra Palace, and then built new ones up into like Earl Street. And that was called the Northern Heights. Most of that never happened because, you know, the war happened instead. And like they took up these existing branch lines and never rebuilt them. So you can actually sort of walk along them. There's a thing called the Parkland Walk, which is just, it's just this sort of very long, thin park that you can walk through in North London, where occasionally you pass what used to be a station, but other than that, you'd never know it was a railway. So, the Northern Line got called the Northern Line because...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Of a thing that never happened, so that's that's clever.
And then there are other ones. I mean, Hammersmith and City also makes sense,
boring.
In that it goes from
it's
Hammersmith
just a bit
to
boring,
City.
That one.
Okay,
yeah.
District
was the Metropolitan District Railway,
but we have a Metropolitan.
So yeah, and like so, even though that also doesn't really make any sense, they just kind of use the word that no one else is using. So,
dare I ask you to comment on the Elizabeth Line as a name?
Okay, this is the other thing that I realised writing this is like. So all the early lines are built by private concerns, right? And then the state gradually gets more involved. You get full nationalisation after the war in 1948. And then they start planning what becomes the Victoria Line and the Jubilee Line after that, and then Crossrail after that. But since the state has been involved, they've built those three lines, and the names they get are Victoria, Jubilee and Elizabeth Line. Since the state has been running London Underground, it has built three new big underground railways beneath central London, and it is named all of them after the bloody royal family. And like the Victoria Line could have been the Viking Line, because Victoria to King's Cross, they talked about calling it the Viking Line, but no, they called it the Victoria Line, which is rubbish.
Why was it going to be the Viking Line?
Victoria, King's Cross.
Okay.
And isn't that a much better name?
Or you could call it the Victoria Cross, which is like getting a medal every time you go on the tube.
It is the fastest one. So, I mean, it deserves a medal, the Victoria Line. It's a good line. Anyway, if you'd like to know more of this, there's quite a lot of this online. So you should just read the whole thing, because please validate my existence. Please don't render this pointless.
It's a fantastic piece. It's on City Metric and you can look at it, share it, argue with John about it in his mentions.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's what I like.
But it's interesting you mention the Northern Line being called the Northern Line because of something that was never built. Because the story that's been fascinating me this week is also about something that was never built.
What was never built?
I don't know how often you read the Daily Mail website, John.
I mean, I find it's a bit of a vortex and you just get sucked into the sidebar of shame and looking at people's cellulite, and you know, I get very uncomfortable with myself then, so, you know.
Well, this article also made me uncomfortable. It wasn't about cellulite, though. This is about what London would look like if the gunpowder plot had succeeded.
Okay, I mean, I have some questions, which is, like, how... I think they're probably making a few assumptions there that they can't really support. I mean, I think if the gunpowder plot succeeded in 1605, then quite a lot of the last 412 years of British history would have been different enough. Anyway, just tell me, what do they think? What happened?
Well, so this was created by some historians who are creating a television programme about the importance of spies in British history. And they argue that a network of spies created by Thomas Cromwell helped steer Henry VIII through his marriage troubles and the break with Rome and led to the establishment of the Church of England. Fine. So they've done some mock-ups of things like, for instance, if the Palace of Westminster was actually a French-style castle created for James I's Catholic daughter. I'm not going to lie, it's pretty gaudy. I kind of love it.
But there are buildings around there that look a bit like French-style castles.
Yeah, there are.
It's
not like there's none of that. But I'm kind of with that. I'm like, fine, if that succeeded and you built a castle in its place, I'm willing to accept that. I'm not willing to accept is the idea that, and this is another mock-up they've done, that a monastery potentially would stand in the place of London's financial district were it not for Thomas Cromwell.
Ooh. I mean, I suppose the logic is instead of, like, you know, the Protestant work ethic and the Enlightenment and all those kind of things that people start thinking of as, you know, British values, you do get something that's a lot more, well, you know, Catholic.
This is ludicrous. There are Catholic countries all over Europe.
And also, like, hang on, the modern finance was kind of invented by Italian Renaissance, right? And they're quite, they are a bit Catholic in Italy.
They are a bit Catholic in Italy. It's just that when you really think nothing would have been knocked down and some brutalism being put up instead. There's brutalism all over in loads of Catholic countries. My voice is getting very high. And there's also a picture of a castle allegedly inspired by the design of Edinburgh and Stirling Castle that could be on the south bank, basically where County Hall is now. So, you know, feel free to go and have a look at some of these mock-ups. If you type in Daily Mail, Palace of Westminster, Gunpowder Plot, they will come up. Apparently we would also be eating paella instead of fish and chips, because you also don't have chips in Spain, and enjoying bullfights instead of drama, because obviously Spain had no Renaissance drama.
Paella, is it... I mean, maybe I'm wrong here, but I would imagine that for paella to become the national dish, you probably need a slightly different climate to the one we've got.
I can't... John, there are so many...
Is it possible that, in fact, this isn't science, and that what they've done is the marketing team for this TV programme have very cleverly produced some nice mock... I mean, like, you know, I get very angry when people do this. It's just like, you want advertising, just bloody pay for the advertising. It's like, you know, have you come across Arup, the big design consultancy that's involved in loads of major works projects? But they used to annoy the hell out of me by repeating... Whenever there was like a mock-up of, hey, there could be a floating cycle path on the Thames. Because obviously, you know, if what you really want as a cyclist is to be quite close to water, bobbing up and down and in danger of like being bashed by a boat. It's, you know, it's obviously ridiculous idea. And, you know, boats can't dock anymore because there's a bloody cycle path there. It's a stupid idea, but they got some nice artist's impressions and they got coverage all over the place because people like me are desperate for this, for the clicks that come from this stuff. So it's also the idea of like, oh, we could turn the Regent's Canal into like a tube line, except instead of getting on a train, you swim. And we could put it on the tube map as like, you know, a line on which you swim. And it's like, this is nonsense. This is complete bloody nonsense. But because they do nice, pretty pictures, and because internet journalism as it is, people publish it, and it annoys the hell out of me. It's just like, if you want us to give you coverage and get your name in the papers, just can't you just like advertise? Like, you know, we have bills to pay. I want a salary. I want to like not be worrying about the complete collapse of my industry. I would really just like it if companies would just get their head around the idea that if they want like an independent media to report on what they're doing with their lives, they should make sure that there is still an independent media to do that bloody reporting.
Could we really not have a floating cycle path?
We'll see you next week.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.